way how to write it is really the first way which we used, which is there's a preferred time here, and then we have 3, 0, the metric for the maximally symmetric tree space, and dxi, dxj. And so this is really the least symmetric metric you can write down, which is consistent with the observations, namely with the fact that your spatial geometries are homogeneous and isotropic. And so, so of course, you can add more symmetries, and then you would basically get like maximally symmetric spacetime, but this is the least symmetric one. Of course, there's, I forgot this a square. And so basically, I can blow up this spatial geometry arbitrarily in time. So this a depends on time, is called the scale factor, and then that actually causes that it's not maximally symmetric if you want. And so this frame as written here, so in coordinates t and x, they are especially adapted to these commoving observers. So really t is the proper time of the commoving observers, and if you fix xi's, then these are exactly what you mean by commoving observers. And only these observers, they see this homogeneity and isotropy. So in particular, if you consider their four velocity or u mu, then in these coordinates, it would be just 1, 0, 0. So this is the four velocity of the commoving observer. In these coordinates. So these coordinates are adapted to these commoving observers. So now we know that in GR, the geometry is determined by, it's dynamical, first of all, and second, it's actually determined by the matter content in the universe. So what we'll be doing today is actually we'll study dynamics of this metric, so we will provide some matter content to the universe. And for that, we will take the most general matter content you can think about, which is consistent with the given symmetry. So in particular, I'll be interested which team you knew, which is the most general team you knew, I can write down, which is still consistent with homogeneity and isotropy. So let me discuss today dynamics. And it's a fact, which I will not prove to you, but so for the meta content, we have to choose the meta content to actually find out how this metric evolves in time. Meta content, you know, we don't want to lose any generality, so we describe it by the most general team you knew. That is consistent with the symmetries, so consistent with homogeneity and isotropy on the spatial slices. So now we can study all possible team unus and find the answer. So, and the answer is that this is team unu of the perfect fluid. So there is nothing more general than that of the perfect fluid. So this is perfect fluid. So T mu nu from your GR course is given by P times G mu nu plus rho plus P U mu U nu. And so here, P and rho are the pressure and the energy density of the fluid measured by the commoving observer. So pressure and energy density measured by a commoving observer. And then u mu is the four velocity of the commoving observer. So u mu is the bar velocity and rho and p are the things he measures. Okay, so this is the most general thing you can write down. In most of the cases, you don't really need this general thing, and so we will specify to some concrete subcases of this thing. So note that this, of course, has subcases like dust. So if you want to describe galaxies in our universe, so if you are looking at them from very, very far away, they just look like points of dust. And they usually don't have pressure. So galaxies are pressureless, but they have some density. So for example, galaxies on these scales, on these cosmological scales, they look like dust, and they have p approximately equal to 0. You can also fill in the radiation. So relativistic particles, photons, and so on. So radiation. For that, you have pressure equal to rho over 3. But you can also fit in a cosmological constant. So I write the Einstein equation, g mu nu plus lambda g mu nu equals to t mu nu. Then what you can do is that you can basically move this guy on the other side. And I have g mu nu equals to t mu nu plus, okay, there's 8 pi here and g as well, so I call that 8 pi g newton t mu nu. So it's 8 pi g newton minus lambda g mu nu. So now I can define this to be a new tensor, so 8 pi g newton t mu nu tilde. And so this t mu nu tilde will have exactly the form, well, the contribution of lambda to this t mu nu tilde is exactly of that form of the perfect fluid. If I take special case, so you see that this guy I have to compare to that thing. So you see that pressure corresponds to something like lambda, and then I have to kill the other term, rho plus p times u mu u nu. So in fact, rho plus p must be equal to 0. Okay, so I'm comparing this term to that. And from there, I find that rho lambda equals to minus p of lambda. P of lambda equals to lambda over 8 pi g newton. So cosmological constant term can be written in the form of the perfect fluid stress energy tensor if you choose this energy density and this pressure. So I will not do it here, but you can also fit in the scalar field. It can be also written in that form. Okay, so now, so we will take that, and these are some specific examples which are very, very useful. So now, of course, the next step is to write down the Einstein equations. And luckily for us, because the homogeneity and isotropy, there's only two independent equations. So, and these are called Friedmann equations. So Einstein equation gives you two independent equations that are called Friedmann equations. And so one of them is written h squared. So h is this Hubble expansion, Hubble rate, a dot over a, equals to 8 pi g newton over 3 rho minus k over a squared. So k is that k which enters our maximally symmetric space. So that's one. And then second one is rho dot, minus 3h rho plus p. So these are the two equations that govern basically the behavior of A, the behavior of rho. But you see also that P enters that. So actually, in order to provide solutions of these equations, you need to specify the equation of state, how rho is related to P. Okay. So before I do that, let me discuss some interesting concept, which is called critical density. And so you define critical density for each given time so that k actually in this equation is equal to zero. So rho critical is 3h squared. And it depends on time. So this is function of time, 8 pi g Newton. So now, of course, looking at this equation and looking at that definition, well, I can rewrite my equation k over a square equals to 8 pi g Newton over 3 rho minus rho critical. And so if at any time, at any t, if rho is bigger than rho critical, then this implies, so then the right-hand side is positive, so left-hand side must be positive as well. So that means that k must be plus 1. So k is plus 1, and we have closed universe. Similarly, if any at any time I find that rho equals to rho critical, then I know that k must be 0 and so on. That's it. Smaller. Minus 1, and if it's equal, then it's 0. So now, interesting thing is what is really observed. So let's say I measure currently what is the value of h, which I didn't tell you. So remember when we were deriving this Hubble's law, there was something like velocity is h times delta L. So this is how fast the galaxies are going away from us. And it depends on this constant and the distance to those galaxies. So h has weird units. Well, you can write it in weird units. And at this time, h0 is approximately like 72 kilometers per second per megaparsec. So if you have an object which is 1 megaparsec away, then that is actually moving away from us in that speed. Okay, so now if I find out what H0 is and plug it in, and then I can look at, so then I calculate rho c, and then I look at how much energy density is around me, then you can compare how these are really close or which of the scenarios actually happen here. An interesting puzzle is that you cannot really decide at this point. So observe. That rho is equal to rho c 1 plus or minus 0.01. So we don't really know. And you know that it is so close to 1, this thing is actually called flatness puzzle. And I'll return to this a little bit later on when we have some more tools. Actually, elaborate on this, what this flatness puzzle is. Okay. So now, if you want to find the solutions, so some solutions, so we have two equations to deal with, two equations to solve. But as I said, we need to solve them for A, for rho, and P. So we need one more equation. So need to specify equation of state. Which is rho as a function of p. So now, if I have that equation plus those two equations, I can solve for rho a and p. So now, I will not give you the general equation of state, but I will just give you a very specific one, which is actually valid for very many cases of interest. So for many components, and we have seen that on that TMU cases. So for many components, actually you can define a quantity W, which is by definition P over rho, and you will consider this to be a constant. Okay. So if that is true, then let us look at the second equation here. So what we will do is that we will plug, well, I will keep rho, and instead of p, I will write w times rho, and then use the fact that w is a constant. So second equation, gives me that rho dot is the minus 3, and I'll take rho out, so it's 1 plus w h times rho. So now I just put rho on the left-hand side. So I have rho dot over rho is minus 3, 1 plus w, and then h is a dot over a. And this is just a constant. So I can immediately integrate this equation. And what you find out is that rho is proportional to a to minus 3, 1 plus w. Okay. So we know, so if this is true, that really this guy is constant, then we know how the energy density is related to the scale parameter. And so specifically, you can use the examples of galaxies and radiation and so on. So for example, for radiation, we had that p is rho over 3. That means that w is actually 1/3. Over 3, that means if I plug it here, that rho goes like 1 over 8 to the 4. So actually, radiation dilutes quite quickly as the scale factor increases. On the other hand, if you have matter, then p is 0, which means w is 0. And that means that rho looks like 1 over 8 cubed. And if you have vacuum energy or cosmological constant, then because rho is minus p and w is minus 1, and so if w is minus 1, then this is just a constant. So rho is constant. So actually, the energy density of the cosmological constant does not dilute as the expansion proceeds. By the way, formally, you could also write the curvature term here as the contribution to the density. So now this would be, so rho is behaving like 1 over a square, and that would correspond to w, which is minus 1/3. So you could also include that guy into the energy density if you want. Okay, so this guy is extremely important result. So let me derive it once more based on a different argument. So this is just, so we derive it using these Friedmann equations here, but let's use something even more fundamental than Friedmann equations. Let's use the laws of thermodynamics. So physical derivation of the same thing. So for that, I'll use so this is our universe, let's say for k plus 1. And so we take a tiny bit of region of that space, let's say of volume V, and inside is matter with this some energy density rho. And then from the first law of thermodynamics, you have that dE is the dQ minus pdV. So now energy is energy density times the volume for our piece of universe. So this is T rho times V equals 2. So now dQ is actually the net heat flux which goes inside this volume. So do you think there is any need, that there is any heat flux going into that volume? So this was just, we randomly chose one particular piece of the universe. Is there any flux through the boundary, what do you think? Not really, right? Because it's homogeneous, whatever. So plus, so it's equal to zero. So there's no net heat flux. And then for P, I just plug that W times rho dV. Okay, so that's my equation. So now the only thing you have to do is actually you have to use Leibniz rule here. So it's d rho times V plus dV times rho. So now this is your equation, which you can of course write as d rho over rho equals to, now if you arrange the terms, it's minus 1 plus W dV over V, which means that rho goes as V to minus 1 plus W. Okay. And then you know that the distances are proportional to A. So the volume is proportional to A cube. So this is A minus 3. 1 plus W. So this would be like physical derivation of the same result. So here you basically understand that equation has something to do with the first law, with some conservation or something. Okay. Questions? Yes?
When is it?
It just happens to be. No.
It's just measured.
Okay. So you consider, of course, your universe is a mixture of various things, but it happens that in the past of the, in the history of the universe, it's always one thing which is really dominating. So now we see from those equations that, for example, the radiation may be very relevant when A is small, right? And then when it's become bigger and bigger, that energy density doesn't contribute that much to the universe. And actually becomes matter, becomes dominant, and so on. So you can always sort of approximate the era of the universe by which part of the matter actually is contributing, whether it's matter or radiation or something like that. And for that, you have W approximately equal to constant, and that given for that era. Yeah. So let me just elaborate on this. But of course, You're right. So I would need to specify always the appropriate equation of state, or you can consider an equation of state which consists. So for example, you have a mixture of radiation plus mixture of matter. Then you have to put both components. Let's say if they both contribute, if they are still both important, then you just put a mixture of these things. And so now let me discuss what is the current belief that the universe looked like. So current cosmological model. And that precisely follows those numbers there. So what people draw here is logarithm of rho, and then they draw logarithm of A. So now if I plot logarithm of rho and logarithm of A, then for the radiation, this has a slope of minus 4. So look like something like this. This would be radiation. And a slope minus 4. Then another component is the matter, which is slope minus 3, so slightly like that. So let's say matter. Slope minus 3. And then you have, for example, the vacuum energy, which has slope 0. Okay, so now it would be something like that. So this is lambda, and that's slope 0. So now, basically, people divide the history of the universe. Okay, and then there's a puzzle here, what's happening here, but there's sort of like an inflation here. Inflation. At the very end of the universe, you have this thing here. So now there are a few important points in this graph. So people believe that, so this is how big the universe was. And of course, you can relate that to time. So when that happened, right? So if you have A equal to 0 at the Big Bang, let's say, then later on, it will be slightly bigger, slightly bigger, slightly bigger, and so on. So universe is expanding. So I can relate this to time. So at very early universe, somewhere here, it's in the radiation period. So when the radiation is actually most important, when the energy density is governed by the radiation, then here it will be governed by the matter. And here, the main contribution is lambda. Okay. So here, what happened was Big Bang nucleosynthesis. We will discuss this in detail. Basically, you fuse helium. So now this point here is quite important, and is that actually how when the energy density from the matter and from radiation was equal, so this is radiation matter equality. Slightly after that, what happens is actually the CMB is released. So photons are free to roam anywhere they want. Then again, this point is interesting because you have lambda, the energy density from lambda equals the energy density of matter. Okay, so matter lambda equality. And now we happen to live somewhere here. So our universe is actually now dominated by the energy density coming from lambda. Okay, so we had basically like, well, in the past we have the era of inflation, perhaps. Then we have the era where the radiation was most important, so this radiation-dominated era, matter-dominated era, lambda-dominated era. So now, if you look at that equation and remember what I told you, that you can basically take the contribution from the curvature of the space as the contribution to the energy density, is W equal to minus 1 over 3, then you may wonder why there is no curvature-dominated era, right? So you know that radiation here goes like 1 over 8 to the 4, and matter goes like 1 over 3, 8 to the 3. So then it should be something like 1 over a squared, which would be the k-dominated era. But it doesn't happen because our density is very, very close to this critical density. So that's the puzzle, okay? So you have radiation dominated, then you have matter dominated, then you should have curvature dominated, because that falls like, so this goes like 1 over 4, this goes like 1 over a cube, this goes like 1 over a square, and then you should have lambda dominated, which goes like a to the 0. But this actually doesn't happen, at least not at this point. We are really dominated by lambda. We sort of skip this era. And that's the flatness puzzle. Why this never happened? Why we are so close to the critical density here? So one more thing I would like to say is that we are sort of lucky that this lambda-dominated era occurred relatively very, very late in the universe. So we believe now that the universe is all like 13 billion years. So this happens like 9 billion years, and this is very, very early in the universe. So actually, lambda started to dominate quite late in the universe. Now, we will show on Friday in the tutorial that if you have lambda-dominated universe, then you have sort of like exponential expansion. So if lambda is really constant, so at this point, universe will be exponentially fast expanding. And so if this happened quite early in the universe, then there wouldn't be any structure formation. Anything that would like to collapse would actually be exponentially going away from each other. And so if actually you had era of lambda domination very early in the universe would be boring. There wouldn't be any galaxies and anything. There wouldn't happen structure formation. And so people like these arguments, and they call them anthropic principle. So basically, you are trying to explain why something happened by saying, OK, it must have happened in this way, because otherwise we wouldn't be here. Otherwise, we wouldn't observe what we observe. And these are called anthropic arguments. OK. Questions? Yes?
Can you explain again why you expect to have curvature?
Oh, it's just, you know, based on this. So if, you know, the powers of A are sort of increasing here. So the smaller the A, so this should be bigger, then this should, you know, yeah, be bigger. This should be bigger, and that should, this
so
should be bigger.
So you don't expect this to 1 over A?
So, you know, if, sorry?
Just the next one over
A. I don't know if there is any matter we could have that. Is there? I don't know if any, but yeah. You know, also the fact that this is not a rational number or irrational number or whatever. Yeah, so it just happens to be for our components of the universe that these would be the contributions. But yeah, maybe you can try to invent some better, which is 1 over A. Okay, so now let me do a fancy calculation, which is probably the most difficult calculation I will do here. It's just like more than 4 lines. So far we have been just discussing how rho behaves with A. But I told you that somehow A is related to the time. But I didn't tell you how it is related to time. And of course, so far we only solve one of the equations. We only solve this rho dot equation. So we have still the other equation, which is h squared equals to something. And that actually gives you how a depends on time. Okay, so solution a as a function of time, or it is actually much more convenient and easy to find how it doesn't depend on time t, but how it depends on this conformal time eta. You remember that we had this conformal time eta, and the equation is easy to solve in terms of eta. Okay, so what do we need to solve? The second equation, which is h squared equals to 8 pi g over 3 rho minus k over a squared, where we already know how rho and a are related. So we will do it just for this simple case when w is equal to constant. So where rho 0 a over a 0 minus 3 1 plus w. Okay, so this is the problem, just to solve this equation, provided we know that from the other equation. Okay, so now ingenious trick to do that is actually to divide this equation by this factor so that this thing becomes 1. Okay, so then we have 1 equals 2. So now I'm basically multiplying the equation by 3 over 8 pi g and rho. So it's 3, 8 squared, 8 pi g, 1 over rho, and then plus 3k over 8 pi g rho and a squared. Okay, so it's just rewriting that previous equation. First line done. So second line. So now let's look at this h. And so at this point, it's given by a dot over a, where dot denotes the derivative with respect to time. So now let's change this to derivative with respect to eta. Okay, so this is a dot over a. So now I'll understand a as function of eta. So this will be dA over d eta, d eta over dt, that's a dot, and 1 over a. So now this I will denote as a prime. So prime is related to derivative with respect to eta. And then by definition, if you remember the definition of eta, then this is just 1 over a. Okay, so we have that this equals to a prime over a squared. So now let's make another trick. So let's make a substitution. So I will take a to be some constant a times b of eta to some power. And so I tune that power so that actually it works, so that this thing actually comes out nicely. So it's to some power alpha, where you choose alpha to be 2 over 1 plus 3 w. So choice of alpha is for this particular form of rho. Okay, so if I do that, then a prime is just a times alpha b alpha minus 1. B prime, and then a square b to 2 alpha in the denominator. So I can just take these powers. So this is alpha over a b prime over b plus 1 plus alpha. Okay, that's the second line. Okay. So now, of course, we need to plug for rho as well. So rho will be rho 0. And now instead of A, I'll be plugging this big A and B to the alpha, right? So I'll just plug it in all the equations. So now we have 1 equal to. So now h square is whatever we derived there. So it's alpha square over a square b prime square over b to 2 times 1 plus alpha. So that's h square. Now 3 over 8 pi g, and then 1 over rho. So it's 1 over rho 0. And then I have to use that. So it will be a over a 0 to power 3 times 1 plus w, and then b to 3 alpha 1 plus w. So that's the first term, it's 1 over rho. And then the second term, k term, is plus 3k, 8 pi g, 8 pi g. And again, I have to plug for rho, and I have to plug for a square. So a square is a square b to 2 alpha, and then 1 over rho 0, a over a 0, 1 plus w, and b 3 alpha plus w. Okay. So this is what it is. So now a miracle happens. So basically, you can choose that alpha, which we did over there. And so if you plug it there, and then you look at the powers of b here, and the power of b here, and you just plug whatever alpha is, then they actually cancel. So this thing is killed by that thing, so which is good. If you look at the powers of b here, so you take this b here and that thing here, they combine together to get b square. Okay, so the rest is just a lot of mass, but it's just a constant, right? So if I look at whatever stands here, it's just a constant, right? So now, of course, I want to simplify my life. Okay, I was too generous. So let's take this alpha, not including that constant. So now, so far, A is an arbitrary constant, right? So I can tune this constant so that I kill this horrible term. Right, so I set it equal to 1 by choosing alpha, choosing a. Okay. So then my equation becomes 1 equals to alpha square. Now I have b prime square. And then I have k. And if you look at this term here, it's exactly the same constant. Now we have plus k and b square. So your equation simplifies drastically, and this is your equation. And of course, we can solve this guy depending on what k is, but it's plus minus 1 or 0. You're getting different solutions, but you can write them very uniformly. So solution. And you are welcome to check that, is b of eta equals to now eta. So this is the function, if you remember, when we are using this chi thing. So there's the sine h or sine or just the function. And that means that if I return back to a, so a of eta, which is a times b to the alpha. So now, of course, I need to know what this a is. So I really have to solve this equation. I know I have to know what I set it equal to when I was setting this horrible thing equal to 1. OK, and so the result is that this guy is 8 pi g, which comes from this big letter A, 3 rho 0 a 0 3 1 plus w. And the whole thing is to the power alpha over 2. And then you have sk to the power alpha eta over alpha, where alpha is 2 over 1 plus 3w. So this is the general solution for a general equation of state, basically, and any k. So if you studied cosmology before, you probably considered case by case, where you have different k, you have different matter content, and so on. So this actually is the general solution, as long as w is constant. Okay, questions? Okay, so one thing, last year this course was taught by Latham, and he used to tell jokes, and these are a little bit geeky and a little bit weird, but very hilarious jokes, at least to me. I found them very nice, and I think you would really miss something if I didn't tell you at least one or two. Okay. So imagine there is a train full of animals, and then the train is peacefully going somewhere. And at some point, a rabbit jumps up and says, "Somebody lost my suitcase. Give it back immediately." You know, the other animals look around, but nobody, you know, says anything. "Okay, if you don't give me back that suitcase, the same thing as yesterday will happen today again." Well, everybody looks around, nothing is happening. He said, "Okay, I give you one more time. I'm telling you one more time. If you don't give that suitcase now, the same thing as yesterday will happen today." And so at that point, a lion stands up and, you know, gives back the suitcase. I said, "Oh, I'm so sorry, rabbit. I didn't know that you are so attached to your suitcase. So here you are, many apologies. It will never happen again. But please tell me, what happened yesterday? What so horrible happened yesterday?" "Well, yesterday, I didn't get my suitcase back." So jokes like that, I think. So I will add one or two maybe later on. I think you would really miss something if you didn't hear these jokes. Okay, so we finished with FRW spacetimes and this homogeneous universe. So now we start section 2, which is the matter. And so in order to understand how matter behaves in the universe and how various processes happen, you need to understand basically the thermodynamics in the expanding universe. So the first section will be thermodynamics in expanding universe. Okay, and for that, the key notion is that of the distribution function. So this will be, you know, mostly review, but there will be some useful formulas which we will need later on. So I'm just want to do this. So if you have a phase space P and X, and you consider some volume element in that phase space, so it will be d3 of X, so it will be d3 of P. So then you may ask, how many particles have, you know, are in this volume which have the corresponding x and p. So number of particles, and then we will also distinguish various particles. So we'll have protons and electrons and whatever. So you have various species of particles. So number of particles of species I will be given by this distribution function times the volume element in the phase space. So it's given by Fi of x and p and t times the volume element V3 of x, V3 of p. Of course, we are doing statistical physics, and this what underlines it is actually quantum mechanics. So you need to take, so basically the proper way to go here is you start with quantum mechanics and you go to classical world. And in order to do that, you know that, for example, the particles cannot be, cannot have x and p arbitrarily small. So there's this uncertainty principle. So basically the smallest volume in the phase space you can fit a particle is proportional to h bar cube. Okay, so that's why you divide here by 2 pi h bar cube. That comes from the uncertainty principle, which is the smallest cell. Cell particle can be localized. Okay, and from now on, I will set h bar equal to 1, so it will be just 2 pi cube. Okay, so now, if you know the distribution function, you can calculate many things. So in particular, you can calculate what the energy density is, what the pressure is, and how, you know, what is the number density of particles in space. And so for any given F, I can do that, and I'll give you the formula. So Ni, which is function of T and X, which is the particle density. So basically, you take this distribution function. So Fi is called distribution function. I didn't write it down. So you integrate this distribution function over P. You need to kill the P dependence, and then you have something which depends on T and X, and that's your density. So this equals to D3 of P, 2 pi cube coming from that cell, and Fi T X and P. Okay. So similarly, if you want to calculate the energy density, so this is a particle density. Now if you want energy density, you just weight it with the energy of the particle. So rho I of T and X is just given D3 of P, 2 pi cube, and now the energy of the particle, and in principle that can depend on x and p. Again, we will be dealing with homogeneous universe, so it will not depend on x, it will be just function of p. Fi, t, x and p. Okay, and finally the pressure. Particle I is T and X. And then there is a horrible factor, which will be your homework to prove. So just, you know, go to any statistical physics book and find it there. So anyway, 3 over P. you know, it comes from this derivation of, like, I don't know, we did it on high school, that you have like a small target and then the particles are crushing into the target. And then, so they exchange momentum, and so the pressure is like force per the size of the target, and so on. So it comes from here. So anyway, so the formula is that this is equal to p square over 3e. Okay, so this is your homework. Fi t of x and p. Okay. So these are important formulas. So if you know the distribution function, if you know f, then you can calculate important physical quantities like pressure, energy density, particle density, and so on. Okay. So now, how do you find this miraculous distribution function? Of course, it's not that easy. So especially if you are out of equilibrium, and actually in expanding universe you are. So out of equilibrium, Fi is governed by kinetic equations. And so kinetic equation is something which actually gives you this Fi. And you have various kinetic equations. But the most popular, and let's say even the most general, because nobody knows what's on the right-hand side, is the Boltzmann equation. Okay, so by the Boltzmann equation, which is, you know, one possible equation, and I'll just tell you why is the most general. Well, so on left hand side is clear, so it's dFi over dt. Okay, and so now because Fi depends on, this is a total derivative, it depends on x and p and t, so this is equal to dFi over dt plus dFi over dx, j, and then xj dot, and plus dFi over d pj, and then pj dot. Okay, so that's the left-hand side. So now, if there are no problems, this is equal to 0. And that would be equivalent to your Liouville theorem or to unitarity in quantum theory and so on. So usually people set this equal to 0, and then there's no problems. But then you can have some very nasty collisions of particles or something like that. And so actually it is not equal to 0. And this is related to dissipation and, you know, ugly stuff. So basically then people put on the right-hand side a collision term, which is a function of Fi. And so this is completely not determined what that collision term is. It can be anything. So that it works. So that's why this is the most general kinetic equation, because you can put anything on the right-hand side. Okay. So this is because particles bump into each other. Okay. So this would be out of equilibrium, but we will not do that. Well, you will have a lecture, right, about it, maybe. So now our universe is expanding. So it is really not in equilibrium. So it is really out of equilibrium. So not really in thermodynamic equilibrium. But if you consider processes where, so let's say I have a gas of particles here, and then these particles, they bump into each other very, very quickly, and they you know, behave like crazy. And so now I slowly expand my volume. So if I really slowly expand my volume, then and the particles have enough time to exchange all the information between themselves, then actually this is sort of like an equilibrium, right? If I do the expansion very, very slowly, then I can achieve equilibrium. Okay, so the condition for achieving this equilibrium is that the collision time, so if the collision time of the particles is much smaller, then the characteristic time on which the universe expands significantly, so then the expansion time So now you can approximately estimate this expansion time by one parameter which you have at hand, and that's this Hubble expansion rate, h. So you remember that that has units 1 over time, so I have to take 1 over h, okay? So the expansion time will be like, it's called th, and it's defined 1 over h. So if this condition is satisfied, then you know particles have enough time to exchange all the information they need to achieve local equilibrium, okay? So then, if this condition is satisfied, we have local equilibrium. Local equilibrium. And by local equilibrium, I mean that actually we have the state of maximal possible entropy. Maximal possible entropy. That's what I mean by local equilibrium. So now you remember our first tutorial in statistical physics, where we postulated the maximal entropy principle, and we derived from there the Boltzmann distribution. Okay. So now that thing was a classical thing, and we did. So here we need to do a little bit more, a little bit better. So here we need to take into account particle statistics, whether they are bosons or fermions. So once you maximize the entropy, provided the conditions that you have bosons or fermions, you don't get Boltzmann you don't get Gibbs distribution, but you get either Bose or Fermi distribution. Okay. So from here, if you take the particle statistics into account, and you find out that Fi is actually 1 over E to E minus mu I over T, and then it's minus or plus 1. Sorry for that. Where minus is for bosons and plus is for fermions. And then, of course, if you have small temperatures, then this exponential is dominant, and this plus minus 1 doesn't matter, and then you are back to Gibbs distribution. So this is really the same derivation, basically, as we did in the first statistical mechanics tutorial, but now you take the particle statistics into account. Okay, so let me stop here and continue tomorrow.